confirmed. Multimedia Productions confirmed.
This is the Big and Lazy Podcast. It was something good, good to eat. It was something good to watch.
This is the Big and Lazy Podcast. I'm Big. I'm B Fines. I'm back with another special guest, Dr. Lauren Flaherty. Welcome to the set.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I appreciate that. How you been doing?
Hot, but good. Busy.
So you say summertime is the busiest time for hospitals and doctors?
Oh, no. I was talking about personally.
Oh, okay. Okay.
With family stuff. Mm-hmm. Summer camp, all of the sports activities, and then work.
Got you.
Yeah.
How many children do you get? Like, how do you... In four?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Soccer mom?
I guess. Yeah. One of my kids plays soccer. The other one's at football practice right now. One's a baby, so she doesn't play anything. And then the other one's going into kindergarten. So she plays soccer too, actually. So I guess I am.
There you go.
Yeah.
Because I got a nephew. I ain't got no kids. And I was doing the baseball thing. I was the baseball uncle for a while. I don't know nothing about baseball, but I was out there, you know, throwing the ball on it. It is a commitment. Yeah. Yeah. So, what kind of doctor do you specialize in? What is your practice, field of practice?
Neuropsychology.
Neuropsychology?
Yeah.
Okay. So break that down for layman's terms for our listeners.
Okay. So, if you were to take the field of neurology, which is the brain, and then take the field of psychology, which is mind and behavior, and fuse them together, that's where I am. So how different brain issues can cause changes in behavior, changes in mood, and then the other way around as well.
Okay. So how long have you been studying? Like how long... Have you wanted to be a doctor? Is that something that came later on in life?
No, it's been a long ride. So I wanted to be in a field that had to do with the mind or brain since I was 10 or 11. Actually, what got me interested, which was completely inappropriate for my age, but was the movie Silence of the Lambs.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen that movie?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't know how I was able to sneak that, but age 11, and then in college, you know, I started off in that direction, but I talked to myself, I'm like, maybe I want to do law. What about dentistry? What about business? Blah, blah, blah. I finally got to business after I had taken a little break. I was 24, I think. And then I got a master's in biostats and bioethics and medical humanities, and then started into the doctoral route, which is 5 years. And then you have to do, there's a year of internship, and then you have to do 2 years of fellowship afterwards.
Okay. I'm familiar with internship. What's fellowship?
It's like postdoctoral training. Uh-huh. So it's specialty training. So when you come out, you're a general practitioner of whatever you're practicing. And then when you go into, sometimes they call it residency fellowship.
Okay, I got you.
So that's your specialty training where you're no longer just general, but now you're doing neuropsych or you're doing cardiology or you're doing whichever one you pick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you said you was coming out with an app. Did I hear that correctly? You was coming out with a app for brain
health? Yeah. Yeah. So we actually, it's been out since December 2023.
Uh-huh.
But I recently just put out a second version, I think, that has a lot more useful information. And it's called Friendy. Friend is the Greek, I'm Greek, so the Greek word for mind or brain. And then D is obviously the doctor part.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's a second version that has a lot to do with gut health and how it corresponds with brain health. I'm all about brain health. I think it's like one of the biggest problems in healthcare right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think COVID really brought that out for people to see. And then it also has information about how we're starting to view issues like cognitive impairment, dementia, how people are starting to look at it more as like an insulin resistance, inflammation type issue. Mm-hmm. And then there's other information that's a little bit more on the holistic side, but the science is very sturdy and it has to do with like frequency treatments. Mm-hmm. So that's the difference for the second app, which I think has been out for like, I don't know, 6 months or something like that.
Yes.
So relatively new.
So it is like an app where you can like garner information on different topics. Like, is it free? Is the app free?
So originally the first version was a free download. And then when I went back and added all kinds of stuff, because my thing is like the more I learn, the more I want to put in the app. I don't want it to stay static forever because I want to be able to share it with people. So basically the download fee is about $4.
Gotcha.
It was free for a long time. And, the new version, because I'm introducing this new idea of like quantum technology frequency treatment, my ultimate goal is to have the technology myself be able to offer it as well instead of just tell people about it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's a download fee now, but there's like ongoing blogs. I want to do video blogs. All kinds of things I hope to do with it because my wait list is ridiculously long and I wanted to be able to help people if I can't physically be there.
The wait list to what? To get seen by you?
Yeah.
Really? That's,
yeah.
I don't, that's a good thing. And that's like a...
For me, it is.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. For me, but for
people society, trying to get seen, yeah, I got
yeah,
you.
Mm-hmm. For overall society, it's not. There's just not enough practitioners. You know, I think there's like 16,000 nationwide.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we all know somebody that has either a mental health issue or maybe they have seizures, they had a stroke, they had a brain injury. Maybe they're like your grandmother or your aunt and you're noticing that they're forgetting things. I don't know a single person that hasn't been touched by those things. So like the need is really, really overwhelming. And there's just not enough people in the field.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a lot of people asking me, you know, for advice, where to go, what to do. That's why I came up with the app, because I was trying to think about a way that I could be there for people without physically having to be there,
mm-hmm.
because the wait list is so long. And,
right,
you know, unfortunately for brain issues, 6 months, like if you had, say you had a stroke or there was an injury, the first 6 months is crucial.
Right.
For healing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it takes that long to get in. So
really?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what it's there for.
So frequency treatment, maybe we're on the same page. So could you explain that, please? Like the frequency, because I've heard bits and pieces about it. Like my buddy told me years about it. Like you can cure the body with frequency treatment, like because your body operates at a certain frequency and in megahertz and whatnot. So could you?
Yeah. So it's not like new science by any means. The science is over a century old. I literally have 200 manuscripts of government patented. So it's not just like random scientists coming up with it, but U.S. government patented experiments studying frequency and brain health and even brain manipulation and things like that. So it's real. It basically, if I were to like break it down, you know how if I were to play a sound with a high enough frequency, I could shatter that table yeah. of glass, mm-hmm. right? So the same application could be said for things like cancer cells. And they're starting to do this at certain clinics, but it's a very specialized, like only for certain things, for certain cancers. But the truth is, that can be applied for almost every illness. And so what I'm referring to is quantum technology. So you don't even have to be in person for it. You know, I get it done on myself. So I really do believe in it because I do it. My family, everything. There's even a CPT code. And for those that may not know what that means, it means there's a reimbursement process from insurance. You'll never hear about it advertised, though. Really? It's just not going to happen because, in my opinion, I'm not going to get too, you know, I don't want to have too much controversy, but in my opinion, it would really cut into profits for other treatments that are very lucrative. And the big suits up there at and Big Pharma may not like that too much. So even though it's FDA approved, the science is a century and a half old, it has a CPT code, you're not going to hear it advertised, and most of your doctors aren't going to know about it. But it basically utilizes the same science. I could shatter the glass with a high enough frequency. Every cell in your body operates through chemicals and electricity. Mm-hmm. So each of those have a certain frequency that they operate at, ideally. And what happens is we go out into the world, we have chronic stress. We have, say, if you're a parent, you're working full time, or maybe you have two jobs, chronic cortisol, there's pollution, there's pollen, there's all these things that disrupt your body and frequency firing. And that causes inflammation. Inflammation is pretty much the foundation of most, I can hardly think of a disease that doesn't you know, boil down to that. So that's what it addresses. You could do it from anywhere in the world too. I mean, it's wicked cool.
So how's the treatment like? So how's, like, you said you can do it from anywhere. Like, is it like a I'm gonna say a CD that you listen to? Like, how does it work? Like,
so there's it's kind of like, I don't want to say a box, but there's a piece of machinery that the practitioner uses, and you could take it anywhere. And if you're in person, it is stronger. You know, it does work faster if you're in person. And there's basically just, like, you know, these wraps, and it goes around your head, your two ankles and your wrists, and you just literally lay there in person. And what happens is, depending on the machine, the one that I use most frequently for myself, it runs, I think, 7,000 different scans over your all of your organ systems, tissue, everything, psychological, sexual, sleep, emotional, and then the physical stuff too. And it's so cool how accurate it is. 7,000 scans, and it picks up on the frequencies that are most disturbed, and it puts it in a list of priority. So the things that pop up first are the ones that are the biggest problems. And then it also administers corrective treatments, corrective frequencies that kind of soak in over the next 72 hours. And so if you're in person, you know, it's obviously stronger. But, like, I had it done when I was in Puerto Rico.
Really?
Because I could tell I was dehydrated. You know, it was a family vacation. I was like, I need a little boost. I need a zap. And so it's very cool. There's another piece of machinery. I think it does, like, 13,000 scans, and the scans are a little bit more, like, they're trivectors, so they're a little bit more intense. But either one, I mean, it's pretty awesome. It would be great.
Oh, that's amazing. So, not to keep asking about this, so is this like a once, like, how often do you get this treatment? Like, how often would you recommend, like, just like a once a year, like once a month, you know?
It really depends on what's wrong with you. Mm-hmm. So the first, what I've noticed is the first one, and this would be common, I think, with any specialty, right, that you see them frequently. The first appointment's going to last longest, because how I compare it is, it's like having a cleaning service over to your home for the first time. Like, the first time they do it is going to be a deep clean.
Yeah.
Right? It's going to take a lot longer. But then when they come over a week or two later, it's not going to be as long, because they already got, you know, a lot of the murk and dust and dirt out, right? Depending on what you have, I mean, there's no real answer. If you're, like, suffering from really severe insomnia, or, say, really crippling depression, or you had a horrible case of COVID and your, you know, brain fog is on 10, or
brain fog is a real thing.
It is. It is. That's one of my main hashtags, actually, mm-hmm. is brain fog is real. Or it's something that's been there for a long time. Mm-hmm. They're probably going to say, let's do it weekly. Let's do it, you know, once every 5 days. And then the goal is to back off, maybe do it once a month. And mm-hmm. then after that, it's kind of like when you feel you need it, like a check-in.
Okay, I got you. So what do you, how you feel about the rise of cases in dementia and autism? Like, cause it seems like autism, it seemed like it's, I don't remember it being this frequent as a child. It seems.
Yeah.
So would you say, could you?
Yeah. again, I don't want to add too much controversy, but it's no secret that the rates are rising almost exponentially, and looking at projective stats, it's only going to get worse for both dementia and for autism. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a while ago, it was like 1 in 1,500, and now it's like 1 in 50, and then it's projected to be 1 in 30. I mean, it's just getting crazy. Mm-hmm. Same with Alzheimer's, to the extent that some articles are predicting that, like, 50%, right? So, and then what some people are saying is, well, that's because we have better tools now. We can, mm-hmm. we can pick it up better. We can test for it. You know, professionals are more aware of it. Back then, if you were weird, you just kind of got whooped and you know, put in a different class and whatever. And maybe there's some truth to that. If you test for something more, if you're more aware of it, of course you're going to pick it up more, but not that much more.
Right. That's crazy. Not that 1 in 50, much 1 in 30. That's crazy.
Yeah. There's something we're missing.
So what do you think it'd be? Like, is it, would you say the vaccine? Cause I don't know. I'm not no doctor, but they say, you know, TikTok, the, you know, shots is, you know, the vaccines is, it's tied to the rise in cases of autism and, you know.
So I want to be careful with how I respond to this. I would say that our immune system is the best defense that we have against pathogens and things like polio, smallpox. Sure, the incidence went down when around the time that vaccines were coming out to the public. But if you actually do an intense, you know, year by year, month by month, time related research, you'll see that the incidence had already started going down naturally from natural immunity mm-hmm. to very, very low levels right before those vaccines came out.
Okay.
So our immunity, if you take care of your body, if you treat it well, our own immune system is a wonderful weapon. What I will say is that, you know, perhaps there's a lot of helpful vaccines out there, but when my problem is, if you're introducing those things to young babies, mm-hmm. you know, their system is not prepared, especially for the shots that have several strains in them.
Right.
It's kind of like overload. And what we do understand about these issues, anything neurological actually, is there's an inflammation component. There's the trouble that particular body is having with eliminating toxins, whether it's metals, whether it's just, you know, buildup, whatever it is, your body kind of has this natural ability to recycle and get rid of waste. If that is impaired for any reason, you're going to have a buildup of, you know, things you don't want in your body.
Right.
And the first place that you're going to start to see it is here and here.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's going to spread to other things, you know, like, for instance, depression and anxiety is heavily linked with things like arthritis, chronic pain, fibromyalgia, very physical things. So there's, you know, definitely a link there. I don't know how much our ways in Western medicine are overloading our bodies with stuff we don't need, and then we're not getting enough of what we do need, is what I will say.
Okay. So would you say African Americans are more impacted by these things?
For sure. Yeah, 100%.
Why would you say, what are some of the factors there? Is it like maybe because they just built a hospital in the West End, would you say it's lack of resources, diet, culture?
Probably all of them. I mean, so the most likely to be diagnosed with autism are Black boys.
Mm-hmm.
So young Black boys. And that's just a fact. As for things like dementia, there's risk factors. If you have diabetes, if you have vascular disease, if you have high blood pressure, if you have autoimmune disease, you are much more likely to develop dementia-related issues. And Black America is just higher risk for that. Now, why? I think that's a really complicated question. Yes, I think that there's a dietary issue. If it is easier to go across the street and get a cheeseburger or a bag of chips or whatever, or if maybe it's cheaper and you have to feed your family.
Right.
If that is, if the amount of effort and money for that is the same as making a salad from your own garden, or maybe like you have your own chickens in your backyard and you have your own eggs, then obviously people under an immense amount of stress, like, you know, you get off however many shifts of work, you just want to eat.
Right.
And if you got kids, they want to eat. And, you know, so that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think there's other lifestyle issues that, you know, I don't necessarily, I may not be the best person to touch on those things, which is why I had a Q&A. And with my app having to do with brain health, I wanted to target the populations that were most at risk first. So I had this Q&A open to the public that was targeting African-Americans. But my thing is, I'm not Black. So I wanted to have a panel of professionals that were Black so they could talk about these social issues, whether it's like generational trauma, like cultural dietary issues, you know, stress from perceived racism, or even just like familial components, like, you know, the differences in family structure and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I wanted them to be able to speak on that. But there are definitely factors having to do with all of those things that relate to overall health. But if your gut's not healthy, your brain's not going to be healthy. And you have,
really?
Yeah, it's the second brain.
Mm-hmm. So do you recommend, I see fasting is more, I ain't gonna say cliche, but it's more getting more popular. I see it more on my timeline and news feed. Like, would you say that's a healthier choice? What's your thoughts on fasting? You know,
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's a reason that this practice is ancient and has been healing for every single culture across the entire globe for millennia. Now, what I would say is you have to good judgment. Like, I would never tell a pregnant or a nursing woman to go on a 5-day fast.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not prudent. However, if you are a healthy person and you wanted to do it, what I would say is absolutely start with 12 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Water. Build up, you know, don't go from nothing to all, like,
yeah,
you know, build it up. But there's evidence to show the cleansing that it does at the cellular level.
Right.
Right. So 100%. But I would just say show some good judgment when it comes to doing that.
Right. I ain't really got the willpower to fast. I fasted one time on accident and it was the best I ever felt in my life. I woke up late, I had some games at 12 o'clock that day. Mm-hmm. So I woke up late and I didn't have time to eat breakfast. So all I had was water. And I referee. So I did about 5 games. So I didn't eat my first meal till about 6 o'clock. And I felt like...
You felt great.
Oh, I felt great. Real wonderful. But I ain't got the willpower. Maybe that's just me. I ain't got the willpower to do it on my own. But I was just, you know, at the game, I didn't have time to eat. You know, I didn't really want no hot... You know what I mean? So
yeah.
And I felt the best I ever felt in my life. So that's my fasting testimony. Maybe I should do it more often. You know what I mean?
I mean, I would just start small. Like, I wouldn't even approach it as like this big thing of fasting. I would just approach it with a completely different mindset. Like, instead of, because I don't like to fast either. I mean, I might not look like it, but I love, 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 love food. I love to eat. So I know that if I approach it as like this daunting, like martyr thing where I have to fast, I'm not going to, not going to see it through all the way. But if I approach it like, you know what? I am going to eat today, but I'm going to do X, Y, and Z, and I'm going to fill my day. I'm going to have this fruit juice to be with me the whole day, and I'm going to make that fruit juice myself. So I know there's good stuff in there, and I'm not going to eat till 5 p.m. I think I would have like a, I have had better success with that than if like I approach it as this, you know, big thing that if I fail, then it means I don't have a lot of willpower.
Right.
Because we're humans. Baby steps. And come on, you know. But yeah, people have had really, really good results from it. You don't do it like, so like my grandmother, so I'm Orthodox, right? So when Lent comes around, the Orthodox fast is very strict, like very strict.
What's Orthodox? I'm not, is that a religion?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like the original form of Christianity, like very old school, untouched, unchanged, even before Catholicism. And so the fast is very strict, and it goes back to the way that they did things. My grandmother, who is still alive and kicking at 95, like she wants to do that fast. And we're all like, no.
Yeah.
No, that is, I know why you want to do it. No, like that will cause more problems than it fixes.
Okay.
But say for a 35-year-old man or woman, you're not pregnant, you're not nursing, like you can do it. If you frame it the right way, it can, there's tons of benefits for you at the cellular level, the tissue level, the organ level, and then even just up here.
Right.
Because like, if you could change the way, like you just said, I don't have the willpower to do it, that kind of frames, you know, that makes a person feel like they don't have the strength to do it. But say that you did it for 6 hours.
Right.
And then the next time you did it for 12. And then the way you talk about yourself kind of changes. Maybe,
right.
Maybe you can do it. Right.
Right.
So it changes things mentally too.
Okay. So what would you say that it practices in the health field now that could be changed and be better? Like if you could change a thing or two about the...
Oh my gosh. I would renovate the entire thing. But I think it's fragmented. I think to get any, if you have anything that's a complicated issue, you're going to see probably 10 different doctors, and a year will pass before you actually get an answer that resonates. It's too fragmented. I don't think docs, you know, communicate with each other. I also think that medication is sometimes the first resort. And I know, I understand it has its place. It is therapeutic. There's great use and it can save lives. But it doesn't need to be the first resort for everything. Sometimes,
right,
there's many other things that can be done functionally before resorting to drugs.
Right. You know,
that should be sort of a second, third, last resort type of deal.
Are you familiar with the opioid crisis in Purdue Pharma? Because I didn't watch like every documentary about that, like the how the Sackler family just overprescribed Oxycontin and yes, it's on Netflix. They got documentaries everywhere.
I've heard about it before. I haven't watched that particular one, but the general idea being that, wait, but didn't they know beforehand that it was incredibly addictive?
Yeah, they knew it. Yeah, but they paid politicians. They paid off doctors. It was a real big, and they did it for years. They made billions and billions and billions, and You know, they was writing 150 pills. It was crazy. Like, the doctor was in on it. Like, because it had a series of checks and balances. Like, you know, because you got the doctor, but the prescription ain't nothing if you don't take it to the pharmacy. But yeah, the pharmacy got to, you know, get it from suppliers. And it was like a, but it was all, everybody was getting kicked back. It was crazy.
For sure. Yeah. I think my understanding of it is that there was knowledge beforehand that it was highly addictive. And it was massively pushed out to people who didn't necessarily need it. Like, if you have cancer or you just gave birth,
right,
or something like that, yes, like I said, it has its place. Drugs have its place. For things like Xanax, if somebody's having a seizure, you better, like, you better, you know?
Right.
But to know that something is highly addictive and to give it for, say, like headaches or
toothache,
something like that, mm-hmm, right? Like, that is, in my opinion, premeditated, profit driven. And you gotta just, everybody keep in mind that even though the person that you go to see has the name doctor and they have on their uniform, or there's, you know, they work for a company, all of them are humans.
Right.
So not only will they make mistakes, but they also have desires the same way other humans do.
Hidden motives.
Because
you got bad cops, you got bad doctors, you got bad,
exactly, yeah,
referees, bad basketball players, you know.
For sure. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, just like you would anything else, don't always assume that any particular person, just because they have a title, has your best interest at heart. You know, you've got to be your biggest advocate. So when you go in for your own health, first of all, make sure you go in.
Right.
Be seen, you know, but be selective with, you know, people are selective with dating.
Right.
And selective with who they hire.
Right.
Why would you not be selective with who you would entrust your life to?
Right.
Do your research, know your own condition, know your own body, do an amount of research that when you go in for your checkup, doc said, thinks to themselves, oh,
right,
okay, I better be on my toes for this one.
Right.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And you have to be your own advocate because they're all humans too.
So. Got you. So mental health is also like, when I first, that term first got popular during COVID, yeah, mental health. Do you think that's a growing problem? You know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And why, and do you recommend counseling? And do you think, why would some groups be hesitant to go get help? Go get therapy.
I mean, yeah, no, therapy is, I more than recommend it. I mean, I'm not going to say like everybody needs therapy. I'm sure everybody could help, like would do better with it, but just like they would with exercise. But yeah, abso-freaking-lutely. Because if you had strep throat, you would not hesitate to go see a doctor to get the amoxicillin or whatever, you know, mm-hmm, that for, to get rid of that. If somebody's having either an acute or chronic ongoing, you know, mental issue, that will affect their physical health. You cannot separate the mind and body. That is old school thinking that has been debunked over and over again.
You
cannot separate it. Mental health is physical health, and physical health is mental health. There's no way around it.
Okay.
That's why I'm like really big about gut health.
Uh-huh.
And if you need it, get therapy for sure. Why are people less likely? Well, first of all, men overall are just less likely to go to the doctor, period. Like dentist,
mm-hmm,
primary care, definitely not a, yeah, psychologist. Are you kidding me?
Right.
Like, I feel like I would throw a parade for every man that goes. And that's just, you know, they're just less likely to seek help, period. But I think also there's a like a distrust between our healthcare system and Black America as well, and I think that runs deep,
mm-hmm,
like historically, and for, right, good reason.
Mm-hmm.
But I hope that changes. I'm seeing a change. I'm definitely seeing a change little by little.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it gets better. You know, it gets better over time.
Yeah.
The relationship patched up. But loneliness, you say loneliness destroys the brain?
For sure.
Really?
100%.
Like, loneliness, like how? Like, not being in a relationship, like, not being, you know, without a family, like, destroys the brain. Like, this is a proven fact.
I'm not saying, like, if you're unmarried, that you're going to go insane. What I'm saying is, so we saw it a lot during COVID. Every sickness that somebody already had got worse exponentially during COVID. I could take the happiest, healthiest brain person and put them in isolation and they will lose it. There's a reason that isolation is used as like the worst punishment when people are in prison, right? Because it does something terrible to you. But you know, it doesn't mean like if dating only, but if you're not around anybody, if like when we were in isolation and we're staying home, I mean, that was especially for older people, for children. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. So there's some physical and social skills that we have that can only be built based off of interaction with others. Yeah. And if you have not had that by a certain age, it is forever impaired.
Huh.
Even the ability to perceive faces or understand language, that if you don't have that based off of another human being and their interaction by a certain age, it's going to be impaired for life, right?
Uh-huh.
I'm not saying you'll never build it, but it's going to be slower than others. And that is to be said throughout our entire life. And so, you know, older people, they do really poorly with isolation. And it is true that single people, they do die earlier and they do have worse mental health issues. That's not to say it's because they're single.
Right.
But, you know, loneliness in general is not good for the heart or the brain.
Because during COVID and when the world opened back up, I say the teenagers, like preteens, like, they've been locked in the house for a year and a half, 2 years. Like it, in first years back, in first couple of days,
they
back,
were weird.
Yeah, they was wilding out. Like, you know.
Yes. Yeah. That's what I mean. And like, have you ever heard of those stories of like children that were found abandoned in the woods or whatever?
Like newts.
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly. And they're called feral or whatnot, but they were, you know, they didn't have that interaction. They didn't have that. And it's, you know, they're not going to be ever the same as other children. That interaction, it shapes who you are. It shapes how well you can identify faces, the syllables you can pick up on from different languages, how well you can read nonverbal cues, how well you can deal in the workforce, the amount of neural connections between all of your neurons. Socialization is a big part of that. That's a huge cognitive domain.
So would you say introducing kids early to social media and phones, does that affect brain health and development?
Yeah, I think it's bad.
I believe so, too. Like a lot of these kids are not going to have any social skills because it's 24/7. It's just this all day and they can't hold a conversation. And
they can't read a book because like, you ever see what kids are watching on YouTube? Like it switches every 5 seconds. I can't even keep up with it without getting dizzy.
Uh-huh.
And then these kids want say they have ADHD, right? Because they can't read a page of a book. Well, a page of a book takes 30 seconds. And the stimuli, the page isn't changing for that 30 seconds. If you're used to this and this and this and this and this, and now you're having to comprehend this, you're looking for all the other distractions and they're not there. You're going to think you're ADHD. It's like, no, you're just like programmed to be distracted. And social media has already been shown for kids and adults. It causes like depression and anxiety. So it's just introducing it at a young age. I can't imagine. Could you imagine being back when you were in high school and college?
Come on now. I imagine it because I had to write something at work. About a couple of weeks, I had to write down maybe like a couple paragraphs, and I'm like, whoa, like I'm so used to autocorrect and tech. Right. I couldn't spell. I'm like, whoa, like it. Cause the, I ain't gonna say it was a write up at work and I had to write a couple, you know, sentences. I'm like, what the, you know, I'm like, oh my God, I'm, you know, I'm kind of, I couldn't spell. I couldn't, so it was a struggle to get two or three sentences out.
Yeah.
So I can only imagine. I ask my buddies all the time, like with high school and be different. We had social media, like, and I think it ruins the imagination of children. Like, you know,
I think so too. It's done for you online. Like everything is done for you. So that natural effort and art, I guess, to everyday things isn't needed. And then also just the social part. Like I can't imagine being in high school and everything that we ever do is there's a picture taken and posted for the world to see. I mean, that would be ridiculous. Like me with my retainer at lunch, like that would just be terrible.
Yeah. Everything's documented. I was in telemedia class and that was like the little video and that was, if you see a camera out, like, you know what I mean? It was different. All these super cameras, it was one or two cameras in the, in the school. And that was pretty big to be on camera for the little bitty, you know, 30 seconds, but everything's recorded and Snapchat. So you said loneliness destroys the brain. So entertainment worsens it?
I think it depends on the kind.
Uh-huh.
So music is great for the brain.
Yeah.
But it depends on what kind. Because
back to those frequencies.
Yeah.
Back
I was about to say. Depending on the kind, even depending on the content, you know, that has a huge effect on our brain, our health. I mean, you ever been like in a mood and you're in a certain mood and you have to play a certain type of song because it matches your mood? And then like you just feel it even deeper, you know, the music industry knows this, like it's a science, you know, again, going back to those frequencies. But yeah, the content that we take in, it can either feed us or poison us.
Right.
Right. If I'm listening to something, if I put headphones on all day, that's like, you're stupid. You're this. You're that. Look at that. You know, I'm going to end up going to sleep feeling terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And really doubting myself and not really feeling like tomorrow's worth it. If I'm listening to stuff that's, you know, enlightening, introduces new material, maybe I'm learning a new language, maybe I'm, you know, as far as entertainment, maybe I'm looking at sites in different parts of the world, learning about different cultures, maybe I'm, you know, learning about whatever. If the content is positive and enlightening and enriches you, it's wonderful. It actually grows neural connections that has been shown to protect you from dementia.
Really?
Yes.
So to sum it up a little bit, you're saying positive content can actually improve your brain. Like,
yes.
Really?
And negative could take away from it.
And to touch back on the music, like I listen to all types of music. Like I really can't do too much negative music, especially as I done got older. Like, too much negative. I might listen to some Nia Twain or some, you know, Temptations. I got a wide variety of music. He can vouch for that. We took a road trip, man, and my playlist was just immaculate. You know, I just pressed play, and he was driving. I would sleep. He said, "Man, you got a heck of a playlist, man." I'm like, "Yeah, I appreciate that." So, is anything else you want? I see you repping your own brand. Is that your brand? It's an app logo.
Yeah, and it's the app logo. I don't know how well the camera can see it, but and this was not designed, but my shirt was actually made, the embroidery from Eddie Rowe. Do you know Eddie Rowe? He's from like Mob First, but he's like one of my best friends.
He's from where?
One of my best friends.
You said from Mob? You said
that's like his LLC name.
Oh, okay. I got you.
Yeah, yeah.
That sounds familiar. Eddie Rowe?
Eddie Rowe.
Somebody else brought him up. Who was that? Somebody else. That name rings bells.
Yeah. He's awesome. He works with the gentleman that run the podcast, the Oddcast.
Okay.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Anyway.
That might be where I heard him from. It might be.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So he does this. This is some of the work that he does. The logo was designed by my branding guy, Robert Hatfield. So I forgot what the question was. What was the original question?
I see you, anything you want to say. I see you repping your logo. I said, do you, anything you want to say before you get out? Anything you want to plug? And...
Shout out to Eddie Rowe, Ethan McKenzie, and Robert Hatfield, and my IT guy who has actually been the biggest part as far as, because I'm not a technology person. Mm-hmm. So I had all of the PDFs and the ideas and the concept and all of the material, but as far as building the app, I would have been lost. But Bill Reynolds, he was awesome. But yeah.
So do you get your own office, your own practice?
So I have an office. I'm finishing the last part of my fellowship right now, which is like the very end of specialty training, and I'm in private practice. And mm-hmm. I love my office. I love my coworkers. I love everybody that works there.
_B_Fines is my personal IG support. And we're going to end it this on like that. Shout out to Barry Goodall for the shirt.
Another confirmed multimedia production. Confirmed.
Big, big lazy.
Hey, this is B. Haywood, executive producer of Confirmed Multimedia. And if you want extra content, you can go to buymeacoffee.com/confirmed and get early access to all of our content.
You're listening to Confirmed.